From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of January, 2024. I'm Extension's Tug Gleason. It's USDA Report Day. Coming up, we'll review this morning's reports with Mike Zuzlo, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll hear one final interview, this time around from the IFAS series, with Brad Zwilling from FBFM on how to handle taxes this year and next. And then, as we close out our time together, Eric Snodgrass will join us from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agribom to discuss the agricultural weather forecast on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today settled at $4.47. It was down 10 and 3 quarters. The May 10 and 3 quarters lower as well at $4.59. In December at $4.81 and 3 quarters, down 8 cents. Soybeans at $12.24 and a quarter, down 12 and a quarter in the March. The May contract 12 and a quarter lower at $12.35 and 3 quarters in November, down 5 and a half cents at $12.01 and a half. That nearby March, by the way, I had a low today of 12.03, and it again impressively down just 12 and a quarter cents at $12.24 and a quarter. Bean meal futures at 362.10 were down a dime. The bean oil at 48.25, 47 cents lower. Wheat futures down 7 3/4 in the March at $5.96. That for the soft red, the hard red wheat in the March at $6.15 and a quarter, 3/4 cent lower. Here are some of the numbers USDA released this morning. They updated the crop production figures. Corn yield now up 2.4 bushels to the acre at 177.3. They did lower the acreage number just a bit, and that put the total carryout at 2.162 billion bushels. Season's average cash price at $4.80. That's down 5 cents from last month. The soybean figures changed as well. Yield up at 15.6, or rather at 50.6 bushels to the acre. It had been 49.9, and they changed the ending stocks. Up 30 million bushels at 280 million bushels instead of 245, and they are now on a season's average cash price at $12.75. They were up 35 million bushels. Mike Zuzlo at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas now joins us. I suppose you made it through the day, Mike. Kind of a tough one for this set of January reports today.
It's hard to see a grown man cry right before a three-day holiday, Todd.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. This wasn't the reset, I think, that you were hoping for in this marketplace, was it?
No, not at all. I talked to clients and subscribers since the holiday and said, I really think that the supply-demand numbers are not in real time. And my hope was that today's numbers and tomorrow's election in Taiwan would present themselves, given the three-day holiday, for what you called a reset and a redirection, a refocusing of the market attention away from only demand fears, demand-side fears, perceived demand fears, Red Sea fears, China, Taiwan fears, and redirect it back to a more balanced mindset of a tighter world supply that led by tighter South American supplies. That not only did not happen, but the exact opposite perception was given today, in my opinion, with the world corn ending stocks in particular going over the highest trade guess. So we now have even more supplies than we need, and now we have to theoretically take prices even lower to attract theoretically more demand. I'll say at the outset, I just think these numbers are way off when it comes to South America, especially corn. And I'll also say that when you dig down into these numbers, the world corn production jumped 13.6 million tons. China was over 11 million tons of that. And so world stocks and production minus China barely moved versus last month. Will the trade be able to weave through that and understand that come Tuesday?
Yeah, I saw that set of numbers that the world number plus China, not minus China, had jumped dramatically, and that it was mostly on China. China earlier in the week said, yeah, we had a big crop. I saw that release come through, but I was surprised USDA jumped things as in the way they did. Why do you suppose that happened?
I can't give you a good answer because I felt the exact same way you did, because of the fact that you can say, oh, yeah, your crop was so big. Well, then why are you importing so much corn then? And, you know, that's the bottom line truth of the matter. And I got to believe, and I've talked to USDA about this on more than one occasion, of getting more direct intelligence into some of these countries, or using more satellite imagery or something, that we just don't take these countries' words at face value. Why? Because we're not as equipped in terms of relationship as we used to be. I still believe we are starting to see kind of a new Cold War, a Cold War II, as the IMF would suggest, or the World Bank would suggest, that we've got this new East Bloc of China, Russia, India, Iran, Saudi Arabia. The BRICS countries of today are working, I think, primarily against the Western, new West countries of the United States, South Korea, Japan, Europe, so on and so forth. I won't go down that track too much, but I really do think that this is a problem when it comes to food security, and that's what this report really makes me nervous about.
So some of the numbers domestically were interesting as well. USDA, of course, upping the yield in the United States to 177.4 million bushels. Their harvested acreage changed as well. Can you go through some of those numbers?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing that I saw in the corn numbers specifically was the lower harvested acres against that higher yield, as you say. So the production number really didn't change that much. The big change to me was in the soybeans, where they took the yield higher, a little under, you know, maybe 7/8 of a bushel. But then they kept the harvested acres essentially unchanged, maybe less 400,000. But we had a production increase that essentially got drilled all the way into the ending stocks number. And so now we're a lot closer to a 300 million bushel carryover for beans, and a lot farther away from a 200 million. And I think that is important, given the fact that Brazil had this bigger ending stocks from last year. Wheat was probably the bright spot of all of the commodities. Winter wheat acres came in 35.7 total. That gets you about a million acres less. And then we also saw the U.S. wheat ending stocks numbers go down again from a 659 number to a 648 number. So that's where, when I talk to clients and subscribers about after these numbers, was, hey, we need wheat and we need crude oil to change the dynamic when we come back from the weekend with one big eye on Taiwan.
What do you think of the grain stocks figures?
The grain stocks figures bother me because of it. Not only was it the very top of the Bloomberg trade range, but we also see that on-farm storage up 16%, not a surprise. Off-farm or commercial storage up 7%. That gives the market the impression end users do not need to come to the market, do not need to rush to the market.
You mentioned wheat. Wheat in the row crops, corn, soybeans. What's the key for you in all three of those?
Well, I think the key would be that the weather for hard red wheat begins to get more traction, in terms of this warm up doesn't actually come. We stay extremely cold and we start worrying about the crop conditions going down. Then hard red can support the soft red. Then the soft red can start to support the European markets. And that was a noticeable thing to watch, was contract lows were hit in the Paris market because of USDA's report today. We've got to change that dynamic, because that's what we've had that has been working against us for so many months at this point. The other dynamic is we're at $12 NOV beans, 480 D's corn. That's a 2.5 ratio. We're not buying corn acres at this point, in my opinion. We're, in fact, probably eking out more bean acres. So that's something to really watch in 2024 as well, if it continues through next month.
Any other shoes to drop?
The other shoe to drop is going to be Taiwan. And that's where I think, between the Red Sea and the Taiwanese issue with China's talking about reunification in their New Year's speech, that is an issue to watch, because if it doesn't go badly and there's a smooth election and China doesn't disrupt it, I think there might be some short covering led from that. But this is where the Middle East and China I think there's green shoots in China too. There's some of their natural gas imports for the year for 2023 was a record, all-time record. So I think there's some green shoots in China, but we got to get the market to start looking at those things. And I'm hoping next week we do that.
You have a good holiday next week. Won't start until after the Martin Luther King Jr. Holiday on Monday. We appreciate you taking the time with us.
You too, Todd. Thanks very much.
Mike Zuzulo is with GlobalComResearch.com. He is in Atchison, Kansas. One quick news item for the day. The Ag Secretary believes there's a way additional funding for Farm Safety Net reference prices can be obtained without moving monies within a new farm bill. Rod Bain has more from the United States Department of Agriculture.
There is optimism by some that a new farm bill will be approved by Congress this first quarter of the calendar year. When asked his thoughts during an RFD TV town hall meeting Thursday, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack said this is possible, even with potential challenges within farm bill deliberations, such as
folks want to increase the reference prices. They want more support for the PLC programs, the ARC programs, and so forth. Well, that costs money.
In most cases, that means moving farm bill appropriations from one title to another, which could lead to less support of the total farm bill within Congress. The secretary believes a potential solution could be commodity credit corporation funds to address reference prices.
The ARC payments and the PLC payments and the CRP payments all come from the commodity credit corporation. So they've done it in the past. They just need to get to a point where they understand and appreciate that is the easiest and simplest and best way to get a farm bill done.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
That wraps up our look at the agricultural news. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Well, as you know, during the week this past week, I was traveling to Mount Vernon and Peoria and DeKalb with the Farm Dog team. One of the members making a presentation was Brad Zwilling. He's with Illinois FBFM. That stands for Farm Business Farm Management, the association in the state, record keeping for farmers. Thank you for being with me, taking some time to discuss your presentation. I take it you were really concerned about a couple of different things. One of them was just how you handle taxes.
Yeah, we're going to be seeing some higher income tax levels coming up for the amount of income we've seen over the last couple of years, and we've been carrying that forward. I think that's going to be something we need to watch and measure. The average Illinois FBFM farm in 2022 had about $35,000 to $40,000 of tax. That's going to go up. We already know those taxes that were paid in 2023. So we can be seeing some pretty high tax levels still in this 2023 year that we're paying for the 2024 tax bills.
Yeah, so the point being that the income for the coming or the calendar year we're in now may be very high, but that's last year's income, relatively speaking, because it came off the crop that was harvested. And that might not work very well with what the expected income for this coming calendar year's harvest will be.
Right. We're what I'm basically saying is we may need to make sure we hold some of that cash back to pay that tax liability, even though we're thinking about this year may not be look as good as we do the penciling out of those final budgets. We're going to be paying us some fairly high tax bills that we're going to have some cash available in this grain we're selling January and February, keep some of that cash back.
And so how do you do that in the accounting or otherwise?
That's pretty simple. That's, as far as accounting, you just want to keep that back, put that in the bank, kind of lock that up, keep it a back, find a, you know, a short term, you know, CD, do something with that, save some cash back. You should have kind of an idea of what your tax estimate number was going to be. So use that and use as a guide.
Are there other things that you were making sure that you talked to producers about as we were out on the road this week?
Yeah, we were kind of looking at, you know, things, you know, we see what those budget numbers are going to look like. They're going to be lower. However, we had some really strong assets. Asset values have really climbed very quickly. And the debt against that's not really high. So we're in good financial situations. But keep in mind that there's some, it doesn't take long to erode away that working capital, extra liquidity that we have. Be ready for some other things that are coming up. And I think one of the other big points I had is watch out for the deferred tax that you're carrying with those asset and those asset values have increased. You know, if you're getting closer to retirement or changing something in your operation, there could be some tax liability go against that farmland that maybe needed to transfer, or some machinery that you needed to sell or do something different with, or even that inventory that we're carrying.
Yeah. So I was thinking about this earlier in the week as you were having this discussion in front of each of the audience as related to the farmers who were in that retirement age, but still planning to farm, what they might want to do with acres that are high cash rent, and how they might assess that looking forward in order to make sure that they maintain and don't lose income or lose anything that happens to be in the bank as well.
Right. Yeah. You want to look at those and assess where your different risk tolerances are. And, you know, maybe you have some really high cash rent. Maybe you're going to say, maybe I'll get rid of that to do something a little different, hold on that farm ground, or to continue to farm that own ground, or maybe some crop shared ground to keep that cash away for retirement. But also make sure you when you think about how much you need for retirement, you got to think about how much cash you're going to need to pay those taxes as you come out of that period of time, and see if you can stretch that over more than a 1 year window. See if you can maybe sell inventory in 1 year and machinery in a different year to kind of take care of that tax burden, and that way continue to farm a little bit, and then you have and let go of some of those higher risk things where you're losing money on maybe in the next couple of years.
Has the increased cost of machinery and that in the farm inventory created an issue that producers need to be aware of?
It's something to be aware of because, one, I think the big piece is to think about the taxes and the tax impact that it had with it. And what I'm saying is you probably wrote off most of that machinery. So we have these higher values that value may have came down already, and that's eroded away. And you wrote off at a higher level. So when you sell that piece of equipment or trade it in, now they treat it as a sale. When you trade in an asset, they're going to look at that, and that's going to be all taxable to you. So be aware of that. You've got, when you sell that machinery, you're going to be looking at a tax liability that maybe you weren't expecting, that it's a lot higher than what you were thinking because there's no basis left in those assets.
Thank you much.
Thank you very much, Todd.
Brad Zwilling traveled with us on the Illinois Farm Economic Series this past week. You can always find more from him on their website, which is fbfm.org. Let's check the weather forecast now with Eric Snodgrass. He's at Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. A lot of ground to cover, literally some places in Illinois and other places across the Midwest. Start with the blizzard, please.
Yeah, the biggest issue with this, sorry, I really wish it were different, is that these lows come out of Texas and they keep going to Peoria and then to Fort Wayne. Now, they've been setting record low pressure. I mean, we've done it now twice this week, set all-time record low pressure in some areas in Illinois and Indiana. But I need these low pressure systems to go to Paducah or Nashville so we can get some snow out of them. So the problem is 34 in rain, and I imagine some folks listening probably heard some thunder last night. There's some thunder snow right now over Peoria. And you got to go pretty far north to get the snow. As I'm sure you've heard, Chicago shut down a lot of their flights. It's going to be a really rough day going from Iowa to Chicago to Michigan. Some places picking up well over a foot of snow out of this. And so here we are waiting for the backside to come in. But as it comes in, it's going to give us a flash freeze here in Champaign. And it's going to be followed by winds that are 30, 40, 50 miles an hour. So it's everything I don't like about winter, man. I'd rather have put me in the snow. Let's get this going. And instead, kind of here's where we stand. Hey, if I had to put a silver lining on it, though, the silver lining is right now, the Mississippi, for the first time in 3 months, is back at low stage. It's been below low stage for weeks and months. There's enough moisture in these last few systems to do that. Unfortunately, it did come with a lot of severe weather south and blizzard conditions from the plains all the way into the Midwest. So that's the wrap up for right now, and got a lot of cold, windy conditions coming in over the weekend.
Yeah, let's talk about that cold. That means when it's that cold, we don't get any kind of precipitation to speak of. So I suppose I want to hear about the Mississippi in that process too, maybe an update there. So what's this cold look like? It looks just frigid.
Yeah, it is. It's our first kind of taste of some Arctic air this year. It was sourced out of Western Canada, finally built some really warm air into Alaska and Greenland that started the displacement about 4 or 5 days ago. And it's just working its way toward us. And so we expect wind chills in the plains to get down into the minus 30 to minus 50 range. We're going to have overnight lows well below 0 Fahrenheit, not 0 Celsius, but 0 Fahrenheit. And our wind chills are going to be pretty nasty around here as well. So the big concern is it'll be a quick flash freeze here. But I was talking with Arlen Suderman this morning about how much of his state, Kansas, and that winter wheat crop doesn't have snow on it with the cold temperatures coming there. So there's some concern, in the West that this cold air is coming in without a lot of good snow cover, and therefore it's not insulating the ground. And as a result, we have some pretty nasty conditions. And by the way, this is going to get all the way down to South Central Florida, which means we may get that very rare, but one of my favorite National Weather Service advisories, which is the falling iguana advisory. You remember that a few years ago?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, we might get that again. It's just kind of a fun, nerdy thing that I always look out for. So yeah, it's going to be cold for about 10 days.
Yeah, falling iguanas, that sounds more like a South American thing to me, but Florida works. Speaking of South America, what are you watching there today?
Well, we got some data in that finally showed how dry December was. So we can add that to November and October. And basically, you string those 3 months together on every data set that I have, and I have 3 different data sets to provide this information. That's the new driest October, November, December on record. So we take that all the way back to World War II, and it's the new driest. Now, what happened since the new year? Some places that have been so dry just picked up 8 to 12 inches of rainfall. The thinking is that that's going to help the later planted crop, but not the early planted crop. And here's my big concern going forward. You know, I talked about this last few weeks. My biggest concern is that at the end of January, beginning of February, which should be the heart of the harvest time period for this first crop of beans, the models are going over very wet on the same spots that were very, very dry. And what that means is when they go in to try to harvest, they could be dealing with some delays. And those delays could cause some issues with the planting of Safrinha crops. Now, staying in Brazil for a second, I'm worried. I now have 2 different forecast models plus some, you know, historical evidence that by the time April gets here, which should be the kind of the beginning of the end of the monsoon, it might come a little sooner than originally forecast. So what that means is if this Safrinha crop goes in late, and we already know it's going to be a bit smaller than last year, we could compromise the end of that corn crop by having it dry down right when it needs the moisture for grain fill. So there is so much going on in South America. And I didn't even tell you about Argentina, which has had a ton of rain and broken out of their drought. So it's going to be a volatile pattern going forward. And of course, today is a pretty chaotic day anyway because of other reports coming out.
One quick minute on a spring outlook here.
All right, I'm going to give you the very quick, did some analysis on this. What I am most worried about for spring is the speed at which El Nino fades. The CPC says drop it off a cliff, give us La Nina by early summer. That's too fast, I think. I could be wrong, but I think it's too fast. So what do I think about spring? I'm concerned once again this year about tighter spring planting windows with too much moisture early. So I'll love that moisture come July, but I'm worried about it, what it means to get the crop in and established well. But that's very preliminary, and we'll talk about it again each week up until that point.
Hey, thanks much.
Yeah, you bet.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org, where right now you can listen to our post USDA Commodity Week program in its entirety. It will also air on many of these radio stations over the weekend. Again, look for it on willag.org or in your favorite podcast application. Search out Commodity Week and, of course, the Closing Market Report. Our theme music for the day is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.